St. Lydia's is undoubtedly the best job I've ever had. A dream job, really, a surprise of God I never expected to happen. St. Lydia's, you, we, whoever comes in the door each Sunday are creative, playful, rooted in tradition, yet ready to break the rules for all the right reasons. I love being pastor here, as hard as it has been at times. More on that in a minute. As many of you know, however, I've accepted an offer for another dream job, again, a surprise of God I never expected to happen. A tenured faculty position at one of the Lutheran seminaries. It's not just tenured, but it's an endowed chair, which I've since learned doesn't actually come with a chair. But it does offer a platform to do work I care deeply about. It's in Chicago, and so we're moving. I remember how hard it was when I first came. Most of you were here to experience the wreckage of 2019. In December of that year, the bishop appointed me to be interim pastor after a really awful conflict with the former pastor led to her resignation after only 10 months. I began my ministry here holding space for truth-telling, hard conversations, listening to pain, and forging a path we hoped toward healing. But brave leaders and congregants held that space with me and offered deep listening and care to one another. People showed up for one another, despite how hard it was. We healed together. Then just 3 months into my time as interim pastor, the pandemic arose like a tsunami, engulfing us all in a wave of panic. The congregation tried 1 week of an awkward hybrid dinner church before going fully online. In uncharted waters, we did what we do. We experimented, noticed, and found our way forward. We bucked the rule of our denomination and our sibling denomination, the Episcopal Church, who both called for a so-called sacramental fast, apparently because they couldn't imagine online Eucharist as possible. But for St. Lydia's, sharing the meal is the whole thing. If we didn't, we wouldn't be us. So we found a way to bless the bread and cup, or whatever people happened to have that night, and to use breakout rooms for dinners we all made at home. We've pivoted more times than I can count, all sharing and envisioning a way to keep St. Lydia's in whatever circumstances, out on Sackett Street, in so many indoor-outdoor variations, eventually on the back deck. All of this was work I shared with you. We again and again figured out a way forward. We made church together. I look back at some of my early emails from 2020. I laughed to see I had 629 emails to or from Jacob in my inbox. Some about liturgy and music, one of his durable places of involvement at St. Lydia's. Some about the leadership table's work during the 2 years he was chair. Some just personal stuff, checking in, planning a walk or a coffee. I look back to the very first exchange just after I started. It was February 2020, and I was learning the ropes of planning a worship leader script for the season of Lent. His gentle coaching says so much about the culture of St. Lydia's. First, he outlines the structure of how the service typically goes. But then he writes, "We, of course, can do other things. For instance, last year and maybe in previous years, we've included a confession. Also, we can do anything." That was exactly right. We have practices deeply rooted in tradition, yet we hold them with an openness to how they might be done differently, adapting the words or songs or ritual structure, experimenting to respond to the life of the congregation and the life of the world. These practices of wide welcome and song and prayer and stories and the meal, these hold us together across time, across comings and goings of particular congregants and clergy. They hold us in our belief and our unbelief, in our hope and despair, in our joy and our grief. Underneath these practices, however, there's something deeper at work. And Jake's email tutored me in that as well. There's a thread through all the emails from Jake. No matter the email's contents, he always signs his emails, "Love, Jake." Not sincerely, as a formal note would have it. Not best, as a colleague might do. Not gratefully, as I often do. No, the only variation to "love, Jake" is the occasional XOXOXO, which is basically the same, love. In the end, there's nothing else to say about what the Christian faith means or what St. Lydia's means. Our scripture passage tonight is one of my favorite passages, in no small part because it is literally overflowing with love. In just 14 verses, the author of 1 John uses the word love 27 times. As I said a few weeks ago, this little section of the New Testament, 1 John, amounts to a mere 1/50th of the New Testament as a whole, yet it holds a full 1/5th of the uses of the particular Christian word for love, agape. Because 1 John is written in and for the life of a particular early church community, it leans into a particular way of understanding God's love for us and our love for God. It is, in a way, an understanding perfectly suited to today's era of skepticism about God or Christianity or religion, which is, frankly, a horror, something many of us would often disavow and run away from as fast as we can. Yet 1 John speaks of the core of Christianity in a way that is at the same time relatable and believable. At the heart of this passage, the author writes, "God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them." In loving, we know God. In being loved, we also know God, for God is love. Yet 1 John does not leave this feel-good sentiment there. No, the moral logic for life and community, for life in the world, is spelled out in the next verse. "Those who say, 'I love God,' and hate a sibling are liars. For those who do not love a sibling whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen." Note there are no qualifying adjectives here for the sort of sibling we must love. No, not just the sibling we like. No, not just the sibling who is like us. And here is the scandal at the heart of the Christian faith. The world turns on saying that some other is disposable, that they're so scandalous that their existence allows us to treat them with disgust, disregard, even hate and violence. How deeply this deformation, this sinful pattern, marks our existence. It brings us to despair often enough. Jesus himself became that scandal, being lynched on a tree for the sake of empire. Yet in the mystery of God's deep abiding love for creation, God raised Jesus from the dead, turning the tables on the meaning of scandal, exposing the scandal to be the act of making any sibling, whosoever, disposable. To all the mechanisms of hate, of violence, God says no. And to all the beauty and joy that is possible in this life, God says yes. In our noticing about congregants' experiences of Lent and Holy Week, Melissa Sacco shared how deeply she needed the Easter Vigil. In the midst of an exhausting world, overwhelming from the personal to the geopolitical, she needed to hear and feel the news that life is stronger than death, that love is stronger than hate. In the wake of that dying to despair and rising to renewed possibility of hope, we risk the scandal of love, of loving one another, and of loving whosoever comes into our path. For as 1 John says, it is in our loving one another that we abide in God, and God abides in us. If we take 1 John to heart, we know that St. Lydia's, despite having a fabulous and charismatic founding pastor, has always been about building a loving community, and not about the presence of one leader. Emily had Rachel Crowe as the first community coordinator who, as the lore has it, coined Dinner Church. Sarah McCaslin launched Waffle Church. Eula Barak was there with sticky wicket questions from the get-go. People have come and gone, giving St. Lydia's a community of supporters the world over. This is the 15th anniversary of the congregation, the 10th anniversary of both Waffle Church and of 304 Bond Street. This longevity is built upon the gifts of literally hundreds of congregants. We know from hard experience that pastors come and go in good times and in bad. But the love of congregants for one another holds St. Lydia's together like a through thread. You, dear people, whether you just walked in for the first time like my mom, or whether you were on the first leadership table all those years ago, you hold the life of St. Lydia's. Love creates the wide open door. Love shares the heartfelt stories. Love cooks the hearty, delicious meal. A lot of emotions arise at a time of transition in pastoral leadership. The leadership table named them in their note to the congregation on Friday: sadness, hope, uncertainty, fear, grief, gratitude. During Waffle Church this morning, we had a whole bunch of feeling emotion cards out on the table, and everyone grabs one as a part of the Eucharistic prayer when I say, "So how are you feeling today?" And everyone holds up their card: tired, angry, happy. They're all welcome, I say, in that Waffle Church liturgy, however you feel. And they can all be tangled up together with one another. But that is only because of the ways we love one another and thereby abide in God and God in us. While I'm with you and after I depart, you will continue to love one another. You'll continue to be loving with and for one another. You'll do it for your interim pastor starting in July and with whomever is called as your next pastor. I hope you lean into that loving presence of each other and of God, singing as you do that familiar song we sing, "What We Need Is Here." We share the sermon at St. Lydia's and we'll hold a brief silence. And when I ring the bell, you're invited to share your stories and experiences that were sparked by the scripture text or by my reflections. Liz is on the phone to, as best she can, participate in the sermon sharing. So I'll pass my phone to whoever wants to speak, and that way she'll have a chance to hear the sermon sharing and she may offer a share too. We begin in silence.